Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. 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 No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Spiritual Insights. I am so excited about today's episode because it's one of those unusual topics that most of us are curious about but rarely get to learn about. Our guest is Dr. Rahm Weber, an international psychic medium now in her 18th year of public work, following an original academic training as a sex therapist. In the metaphysical world, she is well known for her spot-on evidential mediumship, cultivated by her attention to detail and her passion for connecting loved ones. Warm, compassionate, and down-to-earth, Dr. Rahm was recently acclaimed by the New Jersey Herald as having stunning clarity and accuracy. She's based in the New York metropolitan area and has also appeared on numerous television and radio programs, and she's worked with clients from all over the world. So I am very excited to be able to discuss all these wonderful things. Hello, Dr. Rahm.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're welcome. So let's just cover a few things, and then we'll
sure.
get to calls. If anybody would like to call and ask a question, you can dial into the show. The number is area code 347-934-0751. And we will get to you in just a little while. We just want to cover some basics here, okay? Well, first, I'm so happy that you're finally here to discuss what you do. I've been waiting for a while. I just wanted to start in the beginning. What drew you to both? Of course, the psychic medium ability was probably there from childhood. What drew you to be a sex therapist?
That's very interesting. Well, you know, of course, I get the question a lot, and people want to know what's the background. And I think it comes from a place where I was very observant growing up, and I noticed that it seemed like, especially in American culture, we had this way of looking at sexuality that made it othered or put aside from the rest of our daily lives. It wasn't really integrated. It seemed like, you know, people would have their jobs, their homes, their family life. You know, you talked about, you know, what you want to bake for dessert. You know, you'd have your sports interests, your hobbies, whatnot. But then sexuality was like over there. Right? It wasn't like integrated into the fabric of our everyday life, even though that's really how most of us experience it one way or the other. And so what I got curious about is, why is this topic in Cosmo? You know, why is this topic in Neon Lights? Why isn't it in with everything else? So that was partially, it was the curiosity. And then part of it was realizing that I could speak about it with comfort and speak to other people about it and to help make them feel comfortable talking about it very honestly and frankly. So that was, you know, earlier on, and then eventually I found out, wow, you could get a PhD in human sexuality, and I decided to pursue it.
How long did it take to get your degree?
Forever.
Oh, really?
I spent 8 years taking the PhD. I went straight from bachelor's to PhD. So if you count the time that I did with the bachelor's as well, the whole process took me 13 years after high school.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what is the difference between a psychologist and a sexologist?
Sure.
How do they differ?
Well, to start with, a psychologist generally also has a PhD. They may be a doctor of psychology or a doctor of philosophy in psychology. But regardless, to practice, what they'll be is a licensed mental health professional. So they're somebody that can make a diagnosis and treat for specific, frankly, mental disorder, usually, as it appears in the book, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders is how they bill with insurance. But on the other hand, some psychologists might be more humanistic oriented and, you know, might not think in that way per se, but still, it's a licensed mental health professional. Sexology is its own interdisciplinary field, and as a sexologist, you are trained not only to learn about psychology, but also things like sexuality in the law, sex in history, sex in religion, sexual response cycles, sexual anatomy, sexual physiology. So it's very interdisciplinary, and in that sense, you can specialize. Now, some psychologists do get sexological training, but not all sexologists get psychological training. So you can be a practicing sex counselor, but not have a mental health background, something like that, or a sex therapist. On the other hand, some people who are, say, a licensed mental health professional may pick up additional training and then become a sex therapist in that way. The big difference is this. Sexology is an interdisciplinary and humanistic field, and unless we have that licensure, we work in a consulting way, you can say. So we're not going to make a mental health diagnosis. That's the big difference.
I see. It's kind of like when people ask people like us, what's the difference between a psychic and a medium? And the answer is much like the answer you just gave for my question, which is every medium is a psychic, but not every psychic is a medium.
Exactly. That's a really great way of saying it. So one is inclusive, one is exclusive.
Right. Excellent. Excellent. Okay, well...
tie it together here.
And you're trained... I saw the words Masters and Johnson. Do they have a certain... corner on this?
Masters and Johnson in Western culture were the first group of researchers to really not just talk about and ask people about their human sexuality, but to actually observe it. So they did lab-based sex research. And then they wrote about it, and they wrote about what went right and what went wrong and how people functioned well and then how to help things out when people weren't functioning in a way that they were happy with. So they wrote a couple of books that are foundational in the field. And the way in which some of my work is similar to theirs is that for my dissertation, I did a study called The First Physiologic Study of Orgasm in Postoperative Male-to-Female Transsexuals, which is a lot to get in one sound plate.
Yeah.
And in this process, what I did was I actually did sex lab research with people of all gendered backgrounds. So we had people that were transsexual and people who were not transsexual. And we did a comparative study that looked at human sexual functioning with the hope to understand what happens to your sex response after a person goes through a medical sex change procedure. So it was very interesting. Great news, actually. A lot of sense of use it or lose it, actually. That was the first place to start. And I think the way it was abstracted was something to the nature of people have the ability to maintain or gain sexual functioning after sex change surgery. So we definitely found that, yes, you can go through that entire procedure and be a fully functioning person afterwards in your reassigned gender.
Right.
Or I should say reassigned sex. So that when the body and the mind do match, that sexual capacity and sexual function can keep going strong. So it's really great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know anything. When I hear of someone, you know, on a TV show who has reassigned their sex, I worry about them. I'm like, are they okay? I naturally care that they're happy on all levels of their life. You know what I mean? And I didn't even know how to rephrase the questions you just answered. I mean, so much
Absolutely.
Is function. You know, so I'm glad that you found good news in there.
Yeah, and it is wonderful because that's the thing is that once they deal with the issue of having the body and the mind match, then there's the questions of, you know, okay, so how am I going to express myself as a person who's now in accordance, you know? Mm-hmm. And so different issues will come up there. But what was really interesting in the study was not just what we found out about people that were completing sex change operations, but also about what was going on with people that were not transsexual in the study as control groups. So some of what the study also showed was a male's capacity for multiple orgasmic response, which is fascinating.
Okay.
And another one where you had a woman who was in an orgasmic release cycle for a period of over 4 minutes. And I say that carefully. I don't want your listeners to misunderstand. This was a woman that would get to plateau and orgasm and plateau and orgasm and plateau and orgasm very quickly in a short period of time. So the things that we talk about in the course of helping people with their sexual concerns, you know, just in the course of some basic research, you can find out some fascinating things and show them in the lab.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm thinking that, in back to the case of transgendered, I'm thinking that it would be to their benefit to afterwards work with someone like you, a sexologist, but also a psychologist. Is my assumption correct?
Well, as far as the transsexual reassignment issue goes, before a person is allowed to begin hormones or begin the operational procedures, they do need to be working with a psychologist who can start them on the process. And also they're going to be working with a medical doctor, usually a team of medical doctors, because you need to have the approval granted to begin hormones, right? So that is something that somebody with a license to prescribe medicine can do. Afterwards, what we find sometimes is that people go off the grid because for a lot of people that are going through this, they just want to return to normal life. So sometimes a lot of people are lost to follow-up, which is part of the process.
It's difficult being surrounded by
doctors.
It's difficult to be surrounded by doctors all the time for an extended period.
Sure, I mean, people are going to have different responses to it, but I know that people are often just wanting to kind of get on with their lives. So that's something where the follow-up can sometimes just become difficult.
Right. And what were you saying? I'm sorry, we kind of spoke at the same time. Did you get to just say what you were saying as I was speaking?
Oh, I'm sorry. Just a basic idea of that, you know, one of the things that happens with the procedure of sexual reassignment surgery is that when they're dealing with sexual issues, if you can just imagine for a moment being a person whose body and mind are discordant, that's going to result in a lot of other feelings too. So, for example, depression and anxiety are not uncommon in the sense of happening at the same time. If you're that uncomfortable, you might just become depressed after a while, right? If you are not being able to express yourself, if you're not being able to self-actualize in the way that you want to, there can be issues there. So when people are in care for sex reassignment procedures, they're not just looking simply at the body and the physiology and the anatomy and the hormones. They're looking at the whole standards of care that include addressing psychological issues that can come along with the process. So, again, these would be in the realm of a psychologist. That's interesting.
So it is extremely interesting. But how does psychic ability, does that aid you, or is that a totally separate, do you combine them, or is it two totally separate careers for you?
It's mostly separate. I'll tell you honestly that during the time I was starting in practice as a sexologist, the clairvoyance kicked in whether I liked it or not. The thing is that that's not what people were there for. So
right.
I had to be very careful with that and make sure that I worked in a clinical fashion pretty strictly. After a while, because of the amount of work I began getting with psychic work and mediumship, that began to become very dominant. And so for the longest time, I kept these things very, very separate, except for the fact that I think some of the training that I got in the field of human sexuality was really perfect training to be a medium. Because as a sex counselor, sex therapist, sex educator, I'm helping people deal with topics that may be difficult to talk about, okay?
Uh-huh.
And as a medium, we're dealing with issues that are also often difficult for people to talk about. Same thing for psychic work. So in a sense, it gave me very, very excellent training to be in a counseling role in that sense And then when it comes to being a medium or psychic, as I work, I don't have to hold back with my sensitivity because, of course, that's what I'm getting hired to do for people.
Right. And so so can we segue into your career as a medium?
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Okay. So when did that open up, the intuition, the mediumship? There are generally phases in one's life when we have this ability. For instance, knowing about it as a child, but doing a very good job of hiding it, especially as a teenager, then kind of recognizing that this is what you are, and then there's a period where you, quote, come out of the closet and start to admit, yes, I have this intuition and these abilities, and then we kind of take full ownership and put ourselves out there with the title psychic or psychic medium or empath, whatever skill is dominant. What was that like for you? What were your phases?
The path of coming out, yeah. Well, I think I was definitely somebody who was interested in these things in my childhood, but as far as ability goes, I would say that I really didn't begin experimenting until my later teens, and my first experiments were with psychometry, so that would be like holding an object and seeing if you can sense things perhaps about where the object has been or its owners, this kind of thing. In other words, an impressionable, I was using metals usually. I could do it with jewelry, and I still can. So you would get a sense of the metal would be an energetic carrier of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't start doing mediumship full on until I was in my mid-20s, and I'm in my mid-40s now. And I want to say, for the benefit of your listeners in particular, that it really doesn't matter whether or not you've known about a childhood ability or not. A lot of people say, well, you know, the gifted few have it from their childhood, or I'm a seventh-generation medium, or I can do it because my grandmother did it or my grandfather did it. Well, that's all fine and good, and I don't want to
impress
the fact that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that has nothing to do with whether or not a person chooses to unfold it, right? So,
in my case, I was aware of it as a child. Nobody could answer my questions. I had experiences, and then I had more experiences as a teen. But as far as full mediumship opening up, I was 33. But apparently, that's how I wrote my contract, was that for the first 33 years of my life, I would gather information, and from 33 on, I would share that information, and here I am. So
that's a wonderful way of talking about it.
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing – so it was summer of 2001. And the first message I received was, are you willing? And I said, well, yes. And the answer was good. Then the wait is over for all of us. And I'm in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, who's all of us and who's been waiting? But I was basically told, you've been wishing all your life to be what you already are. Which, you know, of course, I look up to Sylvia Brown, have all her books and all that stuff. You've been wishing all your life for what you already are, but it wasn't supposed to start till now. So here's what you do. And that whole summer was training and purging and forgiving and clearing out my third eye, and took off like crazy.
Wow.
But tell us what you're doing with it. You do gallery style?
Yeah, I have done, and I continue to work in many different formats. I mean, there's the bread and butter of the one-on-ones that is still something that I hold very important in my work, where I'm just meeting with one and maybe two clients in my office, and we're spending an hour together, either in a psychic way or a mediumship way, in a sense that either we're going to concentrate on a topic-by-topic session, that would be a psychic session, or we're going to bring in loved ones in spirit that they can identify, that would be the mediumship part. In addition to that, I do a lot of public demonstrations. So most recently I was in Las Vegas at the Family Music Center Theater in Sahara. That was very exciting just a couple of weeks ago. And so basically, you know, getting up in front of a group of people. And my style is that I will connect with the loved one in spirit first and then match them to the person who's in the group. And this can be on a very large basis, you know, hundreds of people, or it could just be, like, say, in somebody's living room.
I love it. Do you want to take – we do have a caller on the line. She's been waiting a while. Do you want to take the call now?
Oh, I'd love to. Let's say
okay,
hi.
Excellent. I'm area code 805. Hi, thank you so much for waiting and for hanging in there with us. Did you want to ask Dr. Ram a question?
Can it be like a psychic question?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Hi, Dr. Ram. How are you?
Mike, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Your conversation's interesting. What I wanted to know is I'm 59. I've never been married. And I did get on a internet dating, but that doesn't appeal to me. It's not authentic enough. And I wanted to know if you saw a relationship coming in for me.
Okay. What's your name, please?
Donna.
Donna. Okay. Hi, Donna. So we're looking
Hi.
At a relationship then. Let's just get clear about a couple of things. Are you looking for a marital relationship?
I am.
What is it that you're looking for? Okay, so you've never been married.
Companionship, mostly companionship, someone to travel with, do, you know, activities with, and just share and have a loving relationship.
Got it. And so the way in which you're searching for people is anything but the internet sites.
Well, no, I'm on two right now, but I don't care for it.
Got it. Okay, so you're not so much caring about how somebody comes into your life, just that they come in.
Yes.
Okay, so let's take a look at that. What I'm doing is this. I want to just share a technique. It's like I'm taking your energy and the energy of potential here, and we're looking at that together to see, hey, what's coming in. One of the things that I'm getting, Donna, is that I'm getting a sense that when people are interested in you, you're not registering it, and I say that with loving kindness.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. I feel like there's people that have been making overtures to you in your life, and you're interpreting them as friendship. And that's the first thing. So I'm not feeling like your plate is lacking in fullness. I'm actually seeing that there's a disconnect here between the overtures that are being made to you and you're taking them on the level that they're meant. Do you understand that? And I'm getting the word recent here.
Yeah, there was one man that invited me to an event, and I knew him. I knew his wife before she passed on, and I didn't register it that he, you know, perhaps liked me, or no, I didn't register it like that.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm hitting on very, very strongly is not for lack of interest from the other side of here, as much as the what to become. This is kind of like off the air homework to become perhaps a little bit more familiar with. What you would register that. I mean, even if, say, you meet somebody and you're not that interested, you just want to be friends, but what I'm getting is that in this most recent gesture towards you, the gesture was made and it just wasn't picked up on. And I'm concerned that the relationship that you want is out there and that you're liable to miss it. And so I'm curious about what a person would need to do to let you know that they're interested in a way that you're going to perceive as they intended it. Because there's a block there.
I think someone has to be pretty straightforward with me because I do miss things. So if they said, oh, I like you, I'd like to spend more time with you, let's, you know, like that type of approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I'm getting is that while you are familiar with it, that it may not leave room for the other person to be different in their approach. And
yeah, exactly.
I'm like you. I like straightforward. It's a wonderful thing because they come and they put their cards out on the table, and you can bring your cards to the table, and everybody's on the same page, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting is that the people that are coming to you aren't necessarily the same as you and me. And the question is that is the requirement of them to be that straightforward and that direct something that's going to make or break a relationship, or is it something that you're willing to negotiate in what I would like to say that the sociosexual phase, in the beginnings of the dating portion? That's the first thing that I'm hitting on. And so I'm not feeling like there's a lack of people coming to your life. It's the question of how can you get on the same page with them. That's why I wanted to reframe it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand that. Yeah, getting on the same page.
Right. And with that, I think a slight shift in the way you're perceiving will change what you're experiencing as well, because I feel like they're there, and they're already there, and they're already in your energy, they're already in your life, but for whatever reason, you haven't been picking up on them because of this issue of directness. And when I turn it back around and I look at it from the place of your suitor, so I'm getting into their energy now. I'm looking at you. the way it's coming across to me, it's almost like you're a little cold. And I don't think you're a cold person. I think you're getting misinterpreted as a result. You see what I mean?
Yeah. No, actually, I think I do get misunderstood, definitely. I get misinterpreted, because I'm very loving and very kind. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm getting the impression that not only are you not picking up on this, but you're also not being seen as you'd like to be seen. So what I would say is after this call, make a little list of things that are other ways that people could indicate their interest to you just so that you've got that on your radar and see if that doesn't change things almost immediately for you. That's what I would suggest.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, because it is a process getting to know someone, you know, and I can't look at someone else as, you know, we're all different, right?
Yeah.
So. And that's the hardest thing. I mean, kind of talking about the sexological portion to bring in here, this is when I can bring it in. Kinsey was one of our best contributors to the field of human sexuality. What he taught us all is that we're really all operating on these very different scripts, and we're going through the world assuming that everybody is looking at the same script for their play in the world. And the reality is that we're all given very unique scripts. So we might have some of the common ground. We might love to make out, and we might love to cuddle and be affectionate and enjoy physical intimacy in other ways. But the way in which we're scripted to get to these places can be so different that just the question is, how can you get on the same page with the people that are interested in you, because you've got these people interested in you already. So I wish you well.
So do you think it's wise then to ask a lot of questions to get there?
I'm sorry?
Do you think it's wise then to ask a lot of questions or just be a good listener and kind of feel it out? Because then if you're reading between the lines, sometimes that's not correct either.
Well, there's a good combination, but I know that when people ask questions about me, I feel like they're interested and engaged with me. I feel like they want to know more. And if somebody doesn't ask me at least some questions, I'm wondering what's going on, right? There's a little bit of hesitancy there. So I think it balances best.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that was very helpful.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, have a wonderful day. And
thank you, Dr.
Good luck to you. I feel good things coming for you.
Thank you so much.
You're
have a wonderful day, too.
Thanks for tuning in and calling in, Donna. I really appreciate it. I'm going to put you on hold so you can continue to listen, okay?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. That was fantastic.
Thanks. She's so lovely. She's lovely. And she's got all this opportunity right in front of her.
And that's great news because, you know, a question like that always puts me on guard because I so don't want to hurt somebody's feelings by telling them something they don't want to hear, you know? We run that risk.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure.
So in your case, what you just did, you tapped into the energy of the potential of what could happen and then matched it up with her energy and then followed the energetic trail, so to speak, to see where the disconnects were.
Exactly. And I think something that you might also find in your readings is that somebody will come in with one question, and when you're working from a spiritual or psychic framework, you get a completely different backstory that wouldn't come up, say, in a clinical practice right away. So you get something all of a sudden, well, hey, you're asking about this, but this other thing
really
is going on. Yeah. And if you turn this key, then boom, that question's already taken care of.
Exactly.
And that's what I love about doing this work. It just lets you get in there immediately.
And you get into the truth, and you get to present that. Because, yes, in my case, sometimes people are asking a question. There's really three questions inside it, or it's a different question, or something's just a little more important, and they think that they're quite what they're asking is the top priority. And it's like, no, deal with this first, and that falls into place. All different. It depends on the person. All different kinds of scenarios. I have a strange knack for getting into other people's heads for people, especially especially children, how they emote, what they think, what they feel, different aspects of the child's mental makeup and how they perceive.
Uh-huh.
And, like, for instance, one woman, the child totally reminded me of myself. I said, you can't leave. You can never walk away from this child without kissing her goodbye. don't ever forget to kiss that child goodbye and kiss them hello the minute you get. They have to know that you're going to miss them when you leave the house, and they have to know that you're happy to see them when you come back. And she was laughing. She says, oh, my God, that is so my child. So it's interesting, the process, and following mm-hmm. those energy threads and the way we get our perceptions. And I just, you know, I love what I do. I really do. Do you find that as you work with people, your technique, so to speak, expands and evolves and becomes
oh,
enriched
absolutely.
By the – okay. Tell us a little
yeah,
bit
and
about –
yeah, I think I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. I think it's really important to know, because I know that before I got into this work, my idea of somebody with a psychic ability was that their ability is static. So in other words, they've got it, they open up, that's what they've got, and it's going to be like that till the end of time and never change.
Right.
And I think working this way, completely different feeling. One is that some of it has come through formal education. Like, for example, I've had the wonderful opportunity to study with some of the best tutors in the world over at the Arthur Findlay College in Stansted, England. I've been there quite a few times. Top of the game, Spiritualist National Union, among the teachers here as well. They teach mediumship and platform skills and psychic development and other similar arts, and they have it in a facility where, you know, it's a residential type of facility where you go and you're there, say, for a weekend or a week, and your meals are included and your breaks are included, and you'll be taught from, like, 9 o'clock in the morning, and when I was there, it was sometimes from 9 o'clock at night, very, very intensively practicing and taking your abilities to levels that you never thought were possible. So challenging all of your belief systems about what's possible in terms of psychic work and mediumship. That's mm-hmm. one example. Another example would just be terms of the way that I work publicly and privately. Say, for example, looking at people energetically, I have developed these techniques on my own just because it gives me the most gestalt sense of doing a reading. So I want to look at a reading from my client's point of view, from maybe their loved one's point of view, and then look mm-hmm. at it from a spiritual point of view, like a top-down. So I want to be able to look at it from all sides and give them that kind of picture rather than just the one-way picture. That's insufficient to me now.
Yes, I agree. Let's talk about channels of perception, and then we'll get into some of the foundational things someone would need to start doing to amplify their intuition, as the title says. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
Let's talk about a little bit about the channels of perception.
Go right ahead.
So one thing I'd like to do is I'd just like to orient people. You talked about the difference between a psychic and a medium a little bit earlier. And I'd just like to expand that, talking about the idea that regardless of where you apply the skills, the skills are still coming from a sensitivity. And the sensitivity is your inner sense of vision, of hearing, of feeling touch, of feeling emotion, of sudden knowledge, of inner smell, and inner taste. Usually that takes care of just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are calling these senses psychic abilities, you're calling them because you have a belief in the soul or the spirit. But a person who does not share that belief system could call them intuitive abilities. So that's what I mean when I talk about the channels of perception. How are you perceiving information that comes through what we might call atypically? So mm-hmm. you're not seeing it with your eyes of sight, but perhaps you're seeing it with your mind's eye, or perhaps you're seeing a projection that you know is subjective, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And to amplify one's tuition, what do you suggest?
I want to give the answer that nobody wants to hear.
Oh.
We got to meditate.
Yeah.
One way or the other, find a technique that works. A person needs to find a technique that works for them. And there's many. And some of them are sitting still and some of them aren't. So for some people, meditation is going into the forest and communing with nature on a one-hour walk. And they clear their mind that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just as good as being able to sit still for an hour and have your mind clear. So please know that if you're an antsy kind of person, you know, it's really important that you can find a way to still the mind that doesn't have to necessarily still the body. A lot of people think you can only still the mind if the body is still, and that's not true for everybody. For me, I sit still. I sit still. And for me, because of the way my hamstrings are set up, I've always crossed my legs. I don't do it because it's a yogic style. I do it because it's comfortable for me, and it allows me to get the body out of the way. And over time, you might be only able to sit still for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 2 minutes. But if you practice and you add on a minute here and there, you can get to keep that state of no mind for longer and longer periods of time. And so when people talk about amplifying their intuition, the one thing you want to be able to do is to have that mind still, so that when you sense something energetically that doesn't feel still, you'll have a way of identifying it. And I think it's the disruption in the stillness that is the reason we need to go back to the meditative process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. And some people can't sit still. So you just testified you don't have to sit still. Connect, clear the mind. And in effect, what that does is it clears the third eye. And I have a suggestion I'd like to add.
Oh, I'd love to hear.
Here's what I found. Those of us who like to daydream a lot, let's look at the mechanics of a daydream. It's basically something that you want to happen, so you create images in your mind, but mostly it's something from the past where we wish there was a different outcome, and we try to mess with that, and we try to change it to make ourselves feel better about the experience. No matter what kind of daydreaming you do, what happens when you do it, because you're not in the present moment, is a gray particle cloud forms in front of the third eye. So on two sides of the coin, the more you go there and the longer you do it and the longer you stay, you become trained in that way. So if you daydream a lot, you live in a fantasy by choice a lot of the time, and then eventually it's kind of like you're training your mind to think that way. You're not looking at reality, and with true perception, you're is still in that fantasy world. On the other side of that, if you meditate...
Because you're trying to change something in that fantasy world.
The majority of the time, you're trying to change the outcome of a situation or things that were said. You know, we all have done that. Like, if you have an argument and later on, you're like, oh, I should have said this. And that kind of plays in our mind. But when we meditate, like I just said, the more you do it, the longer you stay there, then the longer you can be in that space, clearing the third eye, and your senses will absolutely strengthen. No matter what your abilities are, you will strengthen your senses, and your spiritual sight will be much more sharp. Does that make sense?
It does. And there's something that you've been talking about with the idea of fantasizing and daydreaming that I think is really important to add on to. When people say, how do you know it's just my imagination, or how do I know this is real in coming from spirit or spirit communicator, or how do I know this is really my intuition at work, what I'd like to talk to people about is the idea of the sense of work. So, for example, we can conjure up in our mind an image of an orange. So right now, probably everybody that's listening to us talk about this has got an orange in their mind's eye, okay?
I do.
And maybe it's a navel orange or a Valencia orange or a blood orange or whatnot, but we can visualize it. We might be able to smell it. We might be able to, like, even begin to get a taste of that. We might get a touch perception of the rind or the juiciness or whatnot. And this takes effort. But when we clear our mind into that still space and we receive intuition, the one thing we can be assured of, it takes no effort at all. And when people are saying, what's the difference, what I encourage them to look at is there effort involved to create that idea?
Right.
And if the idea comes in, are you trying to use effort to manipulate it? So if you're looking at that situation that occurred, okay, that just pops into your mind's eye. That's truth. Whatever happened, happened. But if you now start trying to manipulate it, that's a sensation of work, and that is your imagination. And I think the way that you talk about it clarifies that for people. So I think that's excellent. Excellent way of explaining it.
I appreciate it. Well, it was not comfortable for me to learn it because that's what I was doing. Even as a kid, that was my entertainment, you know what I mean? So all these beautiful scenarios, my pet unicorn and whatever. But, you know, once I got it through that is not in the present, and you have to stay in the present, and that to try to change the past which no longer exists and is rendered an illusion the minute it happens. The only way to address the past is through forgiveness. But if you want to create your future, be present. Be very clear today on how you want to think and feel, and then this creates, you know, all that wonderful talk about how to create the future from the present moment. But as far as amplifying the intuition, have you identified some obstacles people might face other than not being able to sit still and meditate?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty. Well, one of them is that, just going back a little bit to the sit still part, you know, when people are sitting there and they've got all these thoughts coming through, one technique that can really help them, too, is just the idea of putting them in a box and kind of putting them in a box on a bench and just, you know, kind of saying, I'll come back to this in the meditation, too, because they don't want to let go of whatever's bothering them. You know, maybe they're worried about something, or maybe they can't take their mind off of something. Mm-hmm. Hang on to it. Let it be there for a while. It'll come back when you're done. So that's one part I want to give it. Because I think one of the obstacles that comes up to amplification starts with the obstacles to meditation and be able to just sit still and be clear for a period of time. Another one of the obstacles is this, lack of validation. So a person will be going through their life, maybe 5, 10, 20 years, however long it is, knowing somewhere that they've got this very strong intuition. And the way that they tune into it is, I want to say post-mortem. The thing has already happened, and then they go back and they say, oh, I had an intuition, or I should have, I could have, I would have. I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was the thing to say, you know? And they didn't listen to that inner voice, right? And I think a lot of that is not only that we're trained to not listen to that voice or it's poo-pooed, but because we haven't been trained to recognize that that voice doesn't sound like the rest of the other thoughts that we have 24/7. We have a very, very strong logical mind most of the time. So when we talk about these intuitive hits, they feel different and they're perceived differently, and it might be quieter. Not always, but a lot of the time. And so they don't get put on the same level as logic. There's not a balance often between the intuitive and the logical. And so what I encourage people to do is to learn the feel and the language of that intuition by validating it. So keep one of those little notebooks with you. And when you have one of those insights, don't judge it. Just write it down. Even if you think it's baloney, just write it down. And come back to these insights a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later. And then bring in the critic, you know? But at the time, the most important thing to do is to not censor. It doesn't mean you have to share it with somebody. Just don't censor it and get into the habit of giving these intuitions as you get them and just give it to the paper if you need to. But manifest them into words, into thoughts, into actual sentences and to say, this is what I'm thinking, feeling, perceiving. But don't judge the right and wrong part, because that critical part, that sense of having to make everything right or wrong, that gets in the way.
Yes, that allows doubt to come in. And what we're doing when we're using intuition, the way you were saying, I love the effort example, is there effort involved. When we do this, when we open ourselves up to receive the information, to present to a client, what we're basically doing is allowing. We're not trying.
Yes.
We have to become very relaxed, very clear, get out of our own heads. I relinquished my ego. I discovered that helped me get there faster by completely relinquishing my ego, getting out of the way. And this way, if I have to talk about something that's difficult, like the death of a loved one, I don't have sympathy and fear getting in a way. I can be truly authentic and present the information in a respectful way. But as far as effort, when we do this, there is no effort. We simply allow, and with practice, you know the feeling. You know, you mostly do the same thing. I can get information, and like you said, there's a sudden knowing. I just understand something to be true. Doesn't mean I know anything about a person. Sometimes there's physical sensations. You know, we get those. I get little physical sensations with certain information as well, not just body parts hurting and all that stuff. But like Dr. Ron said, when you keep a log, especially here's the crucial thing, consistently.
Yes.
This isn't something you want to do for a week, drop it for 2 months, and then go back to it for 2 weeks. This is something you want to make part of the way you think, the way you live your life. It's a lifestyle, let's say that. And what I call it is a synchronicities log because of the idea. You like that? Because everybody thinks, not everybody, and not to accuse, but we have to move from the idea that everything that happens is random and that, you know, things are accidental. Like, there's the belief in luck. There are no accidents. Nothing is random. Everything means something. Everything outside of you is a reflection of something on the inside. So I try to get my students to keep a log of whatever happens, no matter how strange or seemingly mundane, and then they start to see the connections. And for me, that's fun. Like, did you ever do that? Did you ever keep a journal of, say, lunar cycles and dreams? And I have it all in one document. Did you ever do that?
I keep a full-on dream journal that I've been keeping for many, many years. And over the years, I've learned different techniques for analysis. Every once in a while, it'll come to manifest in real life. But I think because I spend so much of my working life doing intuitive readings and mediumship for other people, there's not much block right there. So, it's fascinating to keep track of sometimes. Another thing I noticed, and I think you probably noticed it too, is like before you get clients, the things that will start becoming readily apparent to you, you'll start hitting on those insights before the actual client session, or you'll start picking up on people before a mediumship session. Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing the way the universe will conspire to make those events or make those insights known in a very obvious way if you're a professional in the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting.
It's fun. I love the process of it because I'll sit and meditate, clear my mind, and kind of empty my vessel so I can be there 100% for the client. And what I do, because in the interest of efficiency, I like to be efficient, and I like detail. I want 1, 2, 3, give it to me, and help me explain it. So what I do was I make like a shopping list before the call. And it starts in one place, goes down the list, and it could be 5 things or 2 things, or in one case, it was a list of 17 items that I needed to touch on. But as I went through the list, you see how one area of the life tied into the other, like it might start with relationships, and then it went to work, and then it went to childhood, and then the parents and the children, over to this thing, and then ended with lifestyle changes. But it all ties together into one complete picture. And I like that technique because, for me, it's efficient, and it's a very smooth way for the person to receive the information willingly. And it's not insulting. I mean, sometimes, you know, people are going to hear something they don't want to hear. Everybody has to realize that if we're given it to tell you, that's what you need to hear. And a lot of people don't like that, but they need to understand how the person works, I guess, before they go in. Do you do a lot of explaining, like, what to expect from a reading from you?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I do explain is I present it just a little bit differently as you do, but I think we're getting to the same idea. When I was a beginner in my field, I used to think that so many of the things that I picked up on that the client wouldn't accept or understand immediately were like psychic static, especially when it came to doing mediumship work.
Uh-huh.
Over the course of almost 20 years now, what I see is that spirit doesn't waste any energy. Like you, they're extremely efficient. And so when I'm given a image that not only has a name associated but with colors and maybe there's movement involved, each of those things means something. It's the most efficient use of energy. So when I'm seeing somebody's hockey jersey saying presented to me with the number 7 in green and white, I know those two colors mean something. I know the 7th means something. I know the fact that it's hockey and not football means something. It's like every single image or piece of information is holographic and can be unpacked. And so when you're given this information, you know that none of it is a waste. But our task, of course, is how to present it in a way that's also efficient, right? How can we present it to people where they can not just hear it in the metaphoric sense, but really hear it in a way that it can be most empowering to their lives?
Right. I
all of that.
Yeah, I know. That's perfect. Do you want to hear something funny? What you
sure.
had said a couple minutes ago, you know, the efficient use of energy, and like for the most part, I'll say, you know, 99% of the time, 99.5% of the time, when someone schedules a reading with us, their loved one already knows it. So in most cases, they're already there waiting for this phone call to take place so they can talk to us so they
Absolutely.
Can relay a message to them, right? And
right.
just not too long ago, like 2 months ago, I had this client and they wanted to speak to someone specific. And I felt like a goofball. You know, I assumed they were already there. And I was told, you have to wait a minute. And in my mind, I said, wait for what? Well, we're going to get him. Well, why isn't he already here? And I didn't mean to be combative, but it was just unusual. I was like, well, I don't understand. Why is he not already here for me to talk to? Well, just hang on. We're going to go get him. So in about, like, 30 seconds, I can see in the distance someone saying, you know, well, here, just follow me. The gentleman that I was supposed to talk to, I heard him loud and clear. You know what he said? You mean this stuff is real?
And from the other side.
Yes. And my guy
yes.
said, yeah, you're going to talk to her. She's really nice. And I was like, I don't believe this. It was hilarious. And so he was very surprised. And I said, hi. And I told him what I was going to do. And it went great from there. But he was like, are you serious? This stuff is for real? He wasn't over there for very long, obviously. It was only a couple weeks after his death. But isn't that funny, though?
Yeah, I've heard something similar.
Do you have funny experiences?
What's that? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was asking if you had any funny experiences, but go ahead with what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, many. I mean, we could be here all day with stories like that. But like you, I think the idea of like a master or mistress, say, of the ceremonies, somebody that there's a sense of, whether that's a guide or maybe one of the relatives will come through, and they'll have the kind of personality that says, hey, you know, we want to get credit for bringing over everybody over here today. You know, I'll get that sometimes, too. I agree. People who may have had a certain belief system before they passed on get over the other side and are just delighted to be able to communicate. I mean, you can feel it. There's feeling almost like of an energizer bunny thing, like, oh, my God, we can actually do this.
He was
and
so
make
excited.
The connection, mm-hmm. and they will go on and on and on sometimes for their survivor about, you know, mm-hmm. what they can see and what they can observe and all these things that have happened in the survivor's life since the loved one has passed on that they can show awareness of. And it's so exciting.
Mm. Absolutely. What else would I'd like to ask? You're trained in the American and British style of mediumship. What are the differences mm-hmm. and similarities between the two styles?
Okay, well, first of all, I would say that there's two kinds of mediumship that people are probably familiar with or that they've seen on television. One is where a person will go to somebody, say, sitting in a gallery audience, and they'll say, can I come to you? And then they will bring in people who've passed on around them. The other way is when the medium starts off by saying, hey, I'm feeling the presence of this person in spirit or that person in spirit. And they don't know who the spirit is for, but then they match them to the person sitting there. Of course, it's not going to work so much the same when you're in a one-on-one situation because there the spirit is simply present. We tend to call these client-centered or spirit-centered mediumship, but because the British folks tend to be very spirit-oriented and American audiences tend to crave the client-centered, those are some words that we can use for them too, but basically it's just describing differences in mediumship where you're connecting with the client first or the loved one in spirit. And for me, I would say 99% of the time I'm connecting with the spirit first. So that's my sense. I reach out, I connect with the spirit, and then if I'm sitting in private session, it's obviously for them, and if I'm sitting in a gallery or demonstrating on platform, say in gallery, then I'm going to get some information from that spirit communicator very quickly to ascertain who it is in that group I'm needing to connect them with.
Mm. And I know from the outside it might look funny, but to be behind our eyes feeling that pull of, okay, I need to be over, I'm going over in this direction. It's just, it feels like somebody pulling you by the shirt sometimes. It's so strong.
Absolutely.
And that's happened to me.
Or pushing you by the shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, push, pull. I've had instances where an invisible hand grabbed me by the face and spun my head around to see something.
Wow.
That happened.
Wow.
Like, I was going to miss it because I was walking down the street, just kind of, maybe I had a song in my head and I'm singing in my head, and it was like, look over there, and I looked across this huge boulevard in Philadelphia, and there was an Egyptian eye on the wall of a bridge. So I walked a country mile down to the red light. Of course, I'm going to cross the street safely, but I had to go touch it. I had to go touch it. Like, forget
you know,
lunch.
It's funny you bring that up because one of the only times I've had that experience of being visually guided was looking for my grandmother's gravestone in Philadelphia.
No kidding.
So it's funny that you bring that up. Like we say, right, no coincidences. Yeah, I was at the cemetery, and I was looking to find where she was buried. I was visiting, and I just, for whatever reason, I guess I wasn't, like, walking around with a mask. And it was like that. It was like that experience of literally having my head turned, and then my eyes were in direct line of sight
and
with the gravestone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
That little experience, I went over, I touched it with both hands. I left first, and I used both hands. And I just said out loud, my life's about to change in a huge way. 3 weeks later,
right on.
3 weeks later is when I went to a conference. A woman walked up, sat beside me. I looked at her arm, and there was the Egyptian eye on her, tattooed on her arm. She introduced me to A Course in Miracles, and then the mediumship blew wide open. I mean, I could see spirits, feel them, hear them, rocking chairs moving all by themselves, and that's all well and good. But to actually have a conversation, the two-way dialogue was what I really wanted, and that's what happened. But it's funny, you know, the physical. Even walking through a grocery store, there was something in a magazine that obviously I needed to learn about. So it was the shirt being pulled. Go to this magazine, flip through, where's the heat, found the heat, found the article, okay. You know, grabbed the pen, made a note, went home and researched it. But it's it's kind of fun, but it takes, I think, a little practice to trust it and know that it's for the highest good, especially for us. And
absolutely.
So
you know, one thing that I could say is for your listeners, what you can do is you can make this really playful. You know, a lot of times we talk about, oh, my God, you know, what if I suspend my disbelief and just say, you know, there are spiritual presences and we're going to go for it and we're going to have, you know, this communication. Do it in a way that's playful. You know, I'll do shopping sometimes. I'm like, Spirit, show me where I can get, you know, my next pair of boots. You know?
It works.
Little things like that. Some people ask for parking spaces, you know, whatever it is. But if you begin with an attitude of playfulness and joy, well, then you're not coming up with an attitude of fear. And there's no reason that there needs to be fear here. Most people fear what they haven't experienced, that they might fear the unknown. But approach the unknown in a way that's much more lighthearted, and then as you become more comfortable, you know, you can experience more. Like, I know when I was starting, the last thing that I wanted was to be able to see the image of a person other than in my mind's eye. So in my mind's eye was fine. But external, no way. And over the years, that changed.
Yeah. The weird thing about me is when I see them external, I'm like, oh, hello. And I keep going. I don't get – it's just the weirdest thing. I was 13 years old. There's a spirit leaning against a tree, and he's smiling at me. And I was like, oh, hello. And just kept going. And half a block later, I was like, why didn't you stop and ask what his name was? And then I kept going, and another 3 blocks later, I turned the corner of my street, and there he is sitting on the neighbor's step, and I looked at him, I said, hello. He was wearing jeans, a white T-shirt, clearly distinct. And so after that, then I got a little, okay, now I'm being followed. So I quickened my pace, I ran into the house, and instead of saying, you know, Mom, somebody's bothering me, it was Mom, a spirit is following me. And so we called a psychic friend, and she just explained, she said, was she singing? And my mom said, were you singing? I said, well, yeah, I was singing. I'm always singing. And she just said, they just like to be around that. They enjoy watching that. So that was fine. But, you know, not too long ago, someone I was close to passed away, and as I was walking through the dark on this property, they were there, and I was calling their name, like, why won't you answer me? And eventually, she was preoccupied, I guess, thinking about her life, but eventually she looked and I said, it's me. And then I saw the recognition in her eyes. And I said, okay, nice seeing you. And I went where I was going. I was like, wait a second, you should have stopped. But in the mind's eye, I think it's just as effective for me. It's like a black sound stage, and you get, depending on their energy, you get to see them very clearly. But we have a caller on the line, area code 541. Did you want to? Did you have something else you wanted to say? Or you want to take another call?
I'd be glad to take another call.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air. This is Charlotte. Did you have a question for Dr. Rom?
Yes. Hello. My name is Stan. How you doing?
Hi, Stan.
How are you?
Good. I just tuned in to the show about 15 minutes ago, and this is the first time I've attended your show, so I don't. Do I just ask a question, or what's your format for doing that?
Sure, you can just add, you want to ask a psychic question, that's fine.
Okay. I have pretty good guidance. I mean, I'm in constant contact with my divine throughout the day, and it's served me quite well. The reason I'm calling is just to get an additional perspective. I wanted to know what you might be getting that might add to what I'm getting about what's going on with me right now and what the my divine for you might want me to know.
Sure. You know what? I work really, really well with very specific questions. So why don't you ask the question as specifically as you can find a way to articulate that.
Okay. How about that? Okay. How about can you, can you give me any guidance around my relationship right now? I've got, you know, with a beautiful woman, but there's, I've got this longing or something inside of me telling me I'm going to be going somewhere or I've got to do some travel or something. I don't know if you're getting anything around that.
So you want me to look at travel or as far as a relationship?
Well, they're kind of together. I mean, you know, one's going to affect the other.
One's going to affect the other. Okay. So let's take a look at that. So what's coming up for me very strongly is what I would say a fear that if you travel, you will lose the relationship. Is that coming correctly to you?
Well, it's more like I've been wondering if we're really a match in terms of our consciousness levels, because things just, you know, it's sort of like I got to get out or I need something, some kind of breathing room, and I'm not sure what the answer is to that.
Right. Well, just to give you an idea of how I would work this, what I would do is I would ask for a made-up name for the person that you're involved with, and then what I would do is I would start a reading going into your perspective of your partner's perspective of you, and then the reading from the top down. And that's usually something that could take some time. As a quickie thing on a radio show goes, I am feeling very much that the geographical distance would separate you from this relationship, and I feel like it's kind of a exchange of relationship tools that's happening in the sense that you would be gaining and giving insights for each other so that your lives in future relationships could be better. So I'm feeling like it's no mistake that you're having this relationship right now, but I don't feel like it's the be-all and end-all at this point in time.
That's helpful for me to consider. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in and calling in. Stan, I'm going to put you on hold so you can continue to listen, okay?
No problem. Thank you.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I would have liked being able to work with him for a half hour, an hour long reading to get into the nitty gritty of that, you know. It's like you can really only start peeling away the onion a little tiny bit on 5 minutes, but when you start getting into it, you know, I want to know what the meat and potatoes is here, you know.
Me too.
I feel like I'm left with my own cliffhanger.
Yes. And you have to do, just like you said, get into one perspective, get into the other, and then get to the top of the mountain view to see what is really happening, because it's just perspectives and then there's the truth. But I wanted to, we have about 10 minutes and I wanted to explain to the audience where you go, what you do, you can be found serving at the Lilydale Spiritualist Assembly, Fellowship of the Spirit.
Yeah, I travel a lot with my work. I'll give people some ideas from the basics to the more advanced, I guess. My basic work is meeting with people in my office, either by phone, by Skype, or in person. I have an office in Manhattan, and then I also work, of course, Skype and phone to anywhere in the world. Over the summer, I'll be teaching two classes at the Lilydale Assembly. This is all information that can be found on my website. One of them is Psychic Skills for Skeptics, and the other one talks about two-way communication and mediumship. And I'm also delighted that in June I'll be part of the Afterlife Conference in Portland, and there I'll be their on-site medium. So about 2 months before June, they'll start taking registrations, and if you come to the conference and you want a private mediumship session, I'll be there too. And then tomorrow, Sunday, in Manhattan, I'll be teaching a class on unfolding your mediumship. So this is a class, even if you've never had any practice with mediumship whatsoever, you can come in, or if you've had some practice and want to work on your skills, we'll actually have volunteers from the community coming in to help you out. So we'll not only be teaching skills, but there will be an opportunity for you to actually try your hand at reading spirit. So that's very exciting. And there's some other radio shows and stuff coming up. But a combination of teaching, demonstrating, and private work is the bulk of my work right now.
Excellent. You have a lot going on. I wish you so much success. And
thank you so much.
Anytime you want to come back to the show, please just give me a call. Not that you have a whole lot of time on your hands, huh? So you're mostly in the New York metro area, but you do travel and you give lectures, teach development courses, and conduct retreats. And if we go to the website, communicationsinspirit.com, we can access her current calendar. And let me just give a little more information about you, okay?
Sure.
Dr. Rahm is available to audiences of all sizes, but also in person, as she said, worldwide, telephones or Skype, in person in New York. If you are in the New York area or plan to be there, you can visit the website to see her current schedule and where she will be and what she'll be doing. Again, the website is communicationsinspirit.com. You can also connect with her on Facebook, Dr. Rahm Weber, Spiritual Medium, on Twitter, at Dr. Rahm Weber, and that's spelled DrRomWeber. Email is drromweber@gmail.com or through her office at area code 510-496-3496. Call, make an appointment if you have any questions about what type of reading you can expect to receive. I'm sure she'll send you information. Dr. Rahm, it has been exquisite spending this hour with you. It really has.
Oh, Charlotte, thank you so much for having me aboard. I had a wonderful time, and it was a pleasure taking your callers as well. And thanks again for having me come aboard.
You're so welcome. I will be talking to you soon.
Sounds great.
Okay. All right, everybody. That's our show. Thank you to our listeners. Also, thank you to our callers for calling in to ask questions. And we do hope to hear from you in the future. As always, God bless and be at peace.